You know, China sits in Indo-PACOM, but the playground is Africa. I think we need to have a real focus and look at Africa from what the US can provide. And it was critical that their mothers be around at that point on whether that boy was going to go and join a terrorist group or whether they were going to stay within the community.
Welcome to The Convergence, the Army's Mad Scientist podcast. I'm Matt Sanisberg of the Mad Scientist team, and in just a moment you'll hear from Luke Shabro, the former deputy director of Mad Scientist. Mad Scientist is a U.S. Army initiative that continually explores the evolution of warfare, challenges assumptions, and collaborates with academia, industry, and government. Follow us on social media at @ArmyMadSci, and don't forget to subscribe to the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Today, Luke's talking with Selena Hayes, CEO and founder of the Hayes Group International. He'll be talking with Selena about her work creating access to the space domain in Africa, why the DoD should pay more attention to that continent, and the value of empowering women to work in national security. Additionally, this is Luke's final episode hosting the podcast, as he's moved out of federal service and into the private sector. As always, the views expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the Department of Defense, Department of the Army, Army Futures Command, or the Training and Doctrine Command. Let's get started.
Thank you for coming on, Selena.
No, thank you. Looking forward to this.
Now, Selena, you are the CEO of the Hayes International Group, and you've worked extensively in the most strategic levels to introduce and leverage emerging disruptive technologies all over the world in support of global security. You have a really fascinating background. Can you kind of tell our audience about what you're working on now and more about your background and how you got here?
Yeah, well, maybe we'll just start with how I got here. I'm from way down south, had a little bit of a different journey to where I'm at right now. I started in the development space really when I was very young, and that's really how I got into Africa. And I'm not going to age myself on this podcast, but I've been going to the continent for many years. I've been to many places on the continent. I do not claim to be an Africanist. There are a few places that I know very, very well. Nigeria, Congo. I've spent a lot of time in Djibouti, Niger. I'm actually leaving next week for South Africa. Spent a lot of time in South Africa and Angola. So, you know, that really is kind of the, at the macro level, what Hayes Group focuses on is a lot of work in Africa, but also in those, some folks will refer to as gray zones or places that people find difficult to work in. So we say, often say, you know, well, what does Hayes Group do? I said, well, I lead a group of eclectic individuals where we problem solve in unique parts of the world. And we have unparalleled access to people, places, and data. And so we are a disruptive tech company. People hear the word tech. We like to look at how the tech integrates with the humans that we work with, because ultimately, you know, you have to be able to engage with and give solutions to the humans that you're working with on the ground.
Wow. That's, as we said, a fascinating background. But we really appreciate that because we really look at Mad Scientists about solving wicked problems, but even better in the less served parts of the world that are actually critically important, and just love your unique background. We like people that come from different spaces and not just the conventional path. So we could talk about all sorts of aspects of your background. You talked about how much you've been going to Africa, how much work you do there on the continent. Are the U.S. and wider national, Western national security communities and experts, are they not paying enough attention to Africa? And what do you really think is just so critical when it comes to the continent?
Yeah, it's a question that, how I answer it will, probably offend some people and others will agree. You know, I think there's different mindsets. You know, as, you know, we've moved from a VEO, violent extremism, counterterrorism type mindset for the last 20 years, and Africa was a piece of that, but we primarily focused on the Middle East. What we've seen now is that that problem never left West Africa. In fact, it's actually increased. So that hasn't gone away. But then what's happened now is we've doubled down now in strategic competition. And so I often say, ignore Africa at your peril. You know, Africa really has been for many, many years, and I would say decades, the playground for some of those countries that we now see as our adversary. And when you talk about it within the Africa context, you have to be careful, because when you ask Africans, they're not really interested in they understand the strategic competition play, but they're really not interested in how we feel about China or Russia, or it's like, what can the US bring to these markets, right? And I think while from a national security standpoint, it's critical to look at what influences are playing from, you know, China and Russia on the continent. I think we really do have to take a good look at that. I think we are now. We've just had Secretary Blinken turn up on the continent, do a very nice tour of, you know, Cote d'Ivoire and Nigeria and Angola, Cape Verde. I think those are good steps. But, you know, we're playing catch up. And I think we need to have a real focus and look at Africa from what the US can provide. We can't compete within, you know, an infrastructure play. You know, China's very good at that. Let them do that. But what are we good at? And concentrate on that.
I think that makes so much sense. And I think, you know, just to reiterate with that, the U.S. is pacing threat and top global competitor. China is investing heavily in Africa. You talked about it kind of especially in infrastructure, security through its Belt and Road Initiative and other economic, diplomatic, even military ventures. We've seen what Russia has done with Wagner Group and other Russian security forces in the area. And do the U.S. and its allies, based on that, do we need to look at countering that? Or as you said, what are we good at? Is there kind of asymmetric approaches in technology, at least, that we can take? While at the same time, I think you noted before, most of these African nations are not interested in this great power competition. So they're not interested in the great game that may be afoot. So how do we approach it in a way that doesn't make them feel like we're just trying another version of colonization again?
Yeah, I think there's amazing things that we can do within technology, and we can talk about from what my company is doing in respect to the space industry on the continent. Most people give me a side eye and they're like, Africa in space, you know, and also, you know, what we can do around data, you know, what we can do in the security realm, having experience working with the Defense Department and the intelligence community. We've done some great train and assist programs on the continent. And then within our development space, you know, we've gained great access and great programs, PEPFAR being one of them, which really is a logistics and supply chain effort. But the distribution of medication, HIV, AIDS, pharmaceuticals through that program has been game changing for many countries on the continent and should continue. And I think if we had better coordination, I think, across our agencies, and we have improved since first starting in this realm back in the early 2000s. You know, I remember when working in that CivMil space, you know, and DOD, you know, was very concerned about what NGOs were doing on the continent or how to even interact with them. You know, having worked in that space, I always used to say, listen, you need to make friends with the Birkenstock crew because they're the ones that have got the connections with the local population. And then to my NGOs, I'd be like, you know what, you need to make friends with the guys, you know, with the heavy lift and air conditioning, because, you know, air conditioning is really nice once in a while. And that heavy lift, when you need to get out of here, you want to be first in line. So there was a collaboration that I think started to happen. And I think we've done great with that now. Especially in Africa, there's so many different examples of how DOD now is working within the nonprofit community, engaging with another favorite topic of mine, women, peace and security, you know, with the other 50%, as I refer to women. There's been some great programs. I think now as we move forward, the piece that we, from a DOD standpoint, that we haven't been looking at is the economic component now. So how can the economic financial institutions, I think they have more impact now. I remember talking about how Walmart and Amazon actually are more influential than most countries. And so how are they going to play a role within our national security policy? I think that's what we need to look at. And how does DOD interact with those financial institutions and look at the economic impact? Because I think that's critical to most African countries.
I think that's crazily important and often just totally underrated and not considered enough. And we talk about the dime spectrum, diplomatic, information, military, economic, and the DOD, out of our nature and how we are, tend to think mostly about the big M. But there's so many other levers. And as you point out, economic is a huge one there. And you talked about, you know, earlier about space and what the Hayes Group is doing in Africa when it comes to space. So kind of a two-part question. What do you think the aspirational future in the next 10 years of space in both development, infrastructure, and operations on the continent could be? And what is the need and what are the opportunities for a spaceport in Africa?
Yeah, well, now you're getting at one of my favorite subjects, space and rare earth. Most people are like, "What? How does that even combine?" And I often tell people, well, the rare earth that comes out of the ground, primarily in Africa, we actually need those for satellites and for our technology, right? So that's kind of the play there. But from a space aspect, as I said, most people give me a side eye when they're like, are you serious? You're talking about space on the continent of Africa? You know, like, you've got people that are worried that they're not going to eat the next day, right? So yes, that is a concern. But if you look at space from a macro level, you know, you've got data, Earth observation, you've got space, you've got comms, right? So communications, Wi-Fi, internet, and then, you know, you've got services and you've got infrastructure. And, you know, when you're talking about space and communications, you know, when I have to say then, you know what? So if you take space out of the equation and not, you know, you don't have GPS, or, you know, how are you getting your weather forecast, right? It doesn't come from the Weather Channel. Earth observation, those satellites providing data. Those two aspects alone, that, you know, those things that space provides significantly help African nations. One of the programs we're working on with an African country is around the mining industry. And we're using space-based data, Earth observation, to help them with illegal mining and artisanal mining activity. We've helped them with oil spills. We've also helped with in agriculture. So, you know, there are many different applications of space. And I think when we're talking space in Africa, I don't like to lead with space. I'll use a term that my dear friend Kelly Kitas Ogborn has coined, and that's space adjacent. I think when you talk about problem sets of how they use space-based technology best, I think that's a better conversation rather coming in with, like, you know, space in Africa, right? And people are like, oh, so what are we sending Africans to space? I hope so. I want to. But are we at that point today? Probably not. 10 years from now, I would like to think that Africa has their first astronaut. I would hope to see an African mission to space in the next 10 years. As for a spaceport, well, Africa, and I hate to use the term Africa like it's a country, it's in Congo, believe it, DRC, when it was formerly Zaire, they were launching rockets in the 70s from Zaire. Most people, again, give me the side eye, like, are you crazy? Now, was there some failure? Yes, but SpaceX had many failures. And so let's give our African countries some room for failure. That's how they improve. There's also a launch platform in Kenya, and the Italians built that out. That's in Malindi, and it's called Marco Polo. And the Italians have been very proud of how they've built this out, and there have been launch from that site. What myself, Hayes Group, and my subsidiary called Saya Space, along with some of our Kenyan partners, we are looking to establish a spaceport on the east coast of Africa, which just by geography in itself, it is a prime location for launch. So you're about 3 degrees off the equator, straight up into the equatorial ring, about 156 launch windows launching east in over the Indian Ocean. All of those factors really create a really nice environment for a spaceport that is economically viable. So we're looking at the economics of space. Does it make sense to have the spaceport there? And is it going to be economically viable, not only for Kenya, but for Africa as a whole and for those nations surrounding the continent that can also use the spaceport? So we're pretty excited about it in the next 10 years.
No, I think that's fantastic. And I think, again, an underrated area, especially when you look at all the places that the U.S. Army, and when I think about it from a defense standpoint, all the places the U.S. Army is going to be operating, and we are very reliant on space-based capabilities. There are, last I had looked, about in the open source, 5,000 pieces of equipment in a U.S. brigade combat team that are reliant on space-based capabilities. So I think incredibly important, and really appreciate the work you're doing in that area, because, again, you're talking about operating not just in the military aspect, but economically, and that's appealing, I think, I would guess, to the African nations that are involved in that, as opposed to just boots on the ground for them. And, you know, kind of circling back, though, to something you talked about in the previous answer, you also work heavily in empowering women, especially in Africa. Can you tell our audience a little more about that? And why is it so important?
Yeah, I refer to the programming that I did to the other 50%. Often, you know, women, especially in a security aspect, have been overlooked, you know, often seen as victims rather than, you know, empowering women and the role that they've played within the counterterrorism realm that I worked in and within WPS, which is up in northern Nigeria. Some of our adversaries were actually women. You know, we often say that women were victims or these passive victims. They actually were active participants. You know, they were choosing to participate. And so I think there, I always said, let's respect that. They may have a very different mindset to us, but they were the true warriors, right? And we had to respect them for that. And then and just engaging with women in the community, you know, often when there's been a disaster, a humanitarian disaster, you will find that it is the women that are getting up the next day and picking up not only their small, you know, home, it's the whole community. And I think we saw this in Iraq and Afghanistan as well, where, you know, women were so influential. They were influencing their children, their sons that they were, you know, raising. And often, you know, we found that if the woman, the mother, was missing from the family structure, in particular with boys at the age of 14, 15, you really did see a change. And it was critical that their mothers be around at that point, on whether that boy was going to go in and join a terrorist group or whether they were going to stay within the community. So women have always played a very influential role, and they continue to play an influential role within the tech space. And having worked with AFRICOM and the J6 community, I was always impressed with these women that were working in comms and IT infrastructure. And we would go down into the continent, do these exercises, and just these amazing women doing amazing things with so little. It was incredible, and working in a very male-dominated environment. And most recently, very excited about women, peace, and security within the space realm. I was down in Nigeria and had the opportunity to meet with a young woman who is running a African women robotics team. And she built a robotic arm in her garage. And so I think that we're going to see more of these stories come out about what women are doing in the tech space in places that we probably don't really think that anything's going on. But I would be impressed with a woman building a robotic arm in a garage here in the United States, let alone in Nigeria. But yeah, I want to be able to encourage more of that, especially within the space realm.
Absolutely love it. Something we focused on a lot. We had Gail Lamon on before, who's talked about her books, Ashley's War and Daughters of Kobani, and really just an important space we cannot forget about, as you know, the other 50%, and in some cases a world much more than that. So I think really, really important and key areas, and really appreciate the work you do there. Last question for our regular questions, and maybe a little difficult because you've already talked about this throughout the podcast, but if you had to give an elevator pitch right now to the DoD, you know, they're that M part of the dime spectrum, but there's a lot of money behind right now in the defense budget for innovation, not just within the force, but globally. What would you say to the DoD? Why should they care? Why should they be involved in this?
Yeah, so I often say that, yes, you know, China sits in Indo-PACOM, but the playground is Africa and South America. But for where I'm focused, you know, I have to remind people, I say, well, 960 pounds of rare earth and critical minerals goes into every F-35. 68% of cobalt sits in the ground in East Congo. I'll leave it at that.
That's fantastic. As they say, brief, but brilliant. And that's what works best. No, that's fantastic. And I'm just so grateful to have you on here for my last podcast as well on the Army Mad Scientist Initiative. So let's go quickly to our rapid fire questions. We ask all our guests this so the audience can get to know them a little bit more. What is a technology or trend that keeps you up at night?
Technology or trend that would keep me up at night would be the discussions around quantum. And I think the lack of understanding of what quantum can do and how we're looking at combating some of that, you know, or you know, using it. There's a lot of discussion around it. I would like to see more discussion and put in layman's terms, I think, so that the more people can understand it.
I think that's a perfect answer because I think quantum, we featured before about quantum information sciences. And I worry sometimes that quantum is being talked about in major public circles in a way that AI has been, especially, you know, 5-6 years ago, especially in DoD senior leadership, AI was talked about either as something that was Terminator Skynet and is going to kill us all, and we shouldn't, you know, let weapon systems be driven by this, or it was talked about as magic fairy dust that could solve anything. We'll put AI on it, and just a fundamental misunderstanding at that time. And I worry the same with quantum, is that we'll either quantum is this completely black box magic that we don't understand, or we can put quantum on anything and it'll make it better. And I think from studying through mad scientists and engaging with scientists and engineers working on quantum information information sciences, there's a lot more nuance to it. But there also needs to be that kind of, as you said, almost that plain language, layman's terms, so that more people can understand it. And I think there's been a lot of great efforts for education for AI on that, but we're not there yet with quantum. So excellent point. Really love it.
There's another piece that that concerns me. It keeps me up at night, and that would be information narrative. I think it's not seen as a technology. I mean, technology is the carrier of the narrative. I often say within my own company, you know, your narrative is critical, right? And you have to be so on point with your narrative, because once you put it out there, it's really hard to pull back. And it really takes on, you know, a version of its own, and people add to your narrative, can change your narrative. And, you know, when you're looking at narrative and information, when you're talking about nation states, there's some real concerns there. So that, you know, that's not really seen as a technology, but that is another, I would say, another one of my, that keeps me up at night.
Agree wholeheartedly. We had Paul Kobaugh and Dr. Ajit Mann on from Narrative Strategies to talk about narrative warfare and how critical it is, and that you can't just, you know, there's been a I think a reliance in the past, even throughout that coin CT environment or counterinsurgency, counterterrorism environment, where the U.S. especially, and just the West overall, were very reactive and trying to put out counter narratives. But if you don't have a central narrative to drive that, and if it's not well thought out, then you'll never win that battle. And narrative warfare is just absolutely critical. So really appreciate you bringing that in. And then what is something about you that you're willing to share on the podcast that most people might not know?
Yes. So, you know, my dream of always being a sportscaster. I think I've picked the wrong profession. I would love to be on the sideline of the NFL games. Although I did start off wanting to be a sportscaster for cricket because I grew up a crazy cricket fan. So, and there were, I remember when they just brought on a woman to be like a guest sportscaster, you know, in cricket. But yeah, I still aspire at one day that maybe I will be a sportscaster of an NFL game, maybe college football. Be great.
It's never too late. And Matt Sanispert, my co-host and longtime collaborator, will be very happy to hear it because he's a massive cricket fan as well. And the last trip we went on together, he was up at 6 a.m. to watch Ashes. So He's a massive fan, so he'll be really happy to hear that. And I very much resonate with that feeling because I wish my dream career was to be an NFL scout and then eventually an NFL general manager. So very much resonate with that. But unfortunately, I think national security and other international security efforts called to us to make a difference there. So I do appreciate, we're grateful that you are in this space.
Well, I think there's a great opportunity. We didn't really touch on it, how national security and culture come together. You know, I think that our biggest asset is Beyoncé from an influence standpoint. Get her out there on the road. You know, our adversaries copy our culture. When you see a Chinese rap artist, the one I saw was rapping about space, I was like, hold on a minute, you know, what's going on here? So our culture is something that's really hard to replicate. They've created the TikTok platform, but they love what the US, what our creators do. I mean, we're the best at it, right? When they can nail our culture, that's a real concern. They're not there yet.
No, absolutely. I think Western culture still, especially the Hollywood and our music culture and everything else, still tends to dominate. For the U.S. Army Recruiting Command, just we just need Taylor Swift in there and all those recruiting woes go away.
Right. Yeah. And as far as sports, you know, basketball, football, you know, those things really resonate. And I think we don't tend to think about that within the military context. And I think we should take a look at that more.
Perfect. Love it. And finally, a question that we're often told is our hardest. What is your favorite movie?
Oh, Charlie Wilson's War.
So Charlie Wilson, why is that your favorite?
Oh, my kids will be annoyed that I even say that. They've watched it so many times. I think it just really outlines, I think it's like actually the end. They go into the refugee camps and realize kind of what was created and how the money dried up at the end. We weren't willing to see it through. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is really the message of like, you know, we start these things, but we're not there, you know, for the long haul. We're not there, you know, for the long game, whereas our adversaries definitely there for the long game. And so I think that's really what resonated with me. You know, I mean, I also like, you know, Zero Dark 30 and Argo and, oh, you know, okay, there's a trend there. Charlie Wilson's War is my favorite.
I love that answer because I think it speaks to where your mindset is at and how you think about these things. But it was just such a pleasure talking to you. And where can people follow you at and follow your work?
Yeah, sure. So, Hayes Group International, HayesGroup.io is our website. We're on LinkedIn as well. I tend to post primarily about Africa. I will say though, you know, I do like to control my narrative and stay within the shadows a little bit. You don't all need to know what's going on, right?
That's fair. Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Selena. And we were just honored to have you and really appreciate the work you're doing, and we'll have to have you back.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to The Convergence. I'd like to thank our guest, Selena Hayes, as well as Luke Shabro for his many years of service to this podcast and the government of the United States. You can keep up to date with all things Mad Sci by following us on social media at Army Mad Sci or visiting the blog, The Mad Scientist Laboratory, at madsciblog.tradoc.army.mil. Finally, if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you accessed it. This feedback helps improve future episodes of The Convergence and allows us to reach a bigger and broader audience.